There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Yes, a very warm welcome to The Agenda this Sunday morning. Lovely to have you along with us. My name's Claire Sharrock, myself and Georgia Tolley with you through until midday today. Standing in for Tom, of course, he's off for the next couple of days. Plenty to discuss as we get into a new week. We're going to be delving into financial advice, new apps that could help us sell off our old stuff, and planning your Eid dinners. We've got some unusual fruit and veg to impress your guests. All that to come, of course. Plus, later in the show, we'll be catching up with ARN Head of Sport, Chris McCarthy, to get his thoughts on a very busy weekend of sporting action. Bit of tennis, bit of rugby, bit of boxing. It'll all be in there just after 11:30. And keeping me company in the studio this morning, ready to delve into those topics and more, I've got two guests joining me. Omar Al-Jundi, he's the CEO of Badia Farms, and Nigel Sillitoe, CEO of Insight Discovery. Good morning to you both. Lovely to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
Good morning.
We'll be getting to their stories shortly, and we'd love to hear from you too, of course. 4001 if you'd like to join the conversation this morning via the text line. Do get in touch with us today. You can tweet us, DubaiEye1038FM, or give us a call, of course, 423-1010. The line's alive. We always love to talk to you, so please do give us a shout if you've spotted any stories you want to discuss that happened over the weekend. Okay, Georgia Tolley also in the studio with me. Good morning to you, Georgia.
Hello, good morning.
Hot off the business breakfast, if I can
yes.
say that. You had to mop your brow, take
yes.
a deep breath.
Quick breath.
And of course, one of the key stories this morning that we've all sort of woken up to here, broke late last night really, is all out of the G7 summit in Canada. And if you look at the international news pages this morning, anything from the US, from Europe, BBC, CNN, all of those kind of organisations, they're all leading on this because it ended in, well, I think the word being used, Georgia, is disarray.
Yes, I mean, absolutely extraordinary story. You've got the G7 leaders, you know, the most important people, I suppose, in the world, all sitting around having a conference trying to discuss trade and sort out the major issues of the day. They come to a conclusion. Finally, they manage to sign a communique. And then they all leave. Trump jumps on a plane, jumps on Air Force One to head over to Singapore for an extraordinary meeting that he's got with the North Koreans. Everyone else goes and starts giving their press conferences, which is what you always do after a G7. You know, the prime ministers and the presidents go and explain their deal with their public. You've got Trudeau, who goes out, this is the Canadian prime minister, he goes out and gives his press conference. And literally, immediately afterwards, President Trump sends out a tweet. As he likes to do, which effectively completely torpedoes the whole deal.
That's right. He's withdrawn US support for the final communique at the G7 summit and blaming his decision, as you mentioned, George, on the false statements made by, what he calls false statements made by Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau during his new news conference at the end of the gathering. Right. The tweet, we think, was sent from Air Force One because he's on that plane en route to Singapore, where he's obviously going to meet Kim Jong-un later this week. And also on that plane is our US correspondent Simon Marks.
This is a stunning development. President Trump on Twitter pulling US support for the final G7 communique and accusing his host in Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, of being very dishonest and weak. It's a staggering blow-up that isolates the United States within G7 and suggests there is a real prospect of a deepening trade war with America's traditional allies. Meanwhile, here, another summit awaits with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. For that, a cool head will be needed, but on Air Force One, the president is fuming.
I might have bigged up Simon Marks there. I thought he was on Air Force One with the press corps, but he's already in Singapore.
He's already there waiting. So he's going to be on his toes, giving us the news. He'll be on drive.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hear what it was that Justin Trudeau said that so upset the US president.
I told the president that we would be moving forward with retaliatory equivalent tariffs as of July 1st, and he expressed to me that he thought that would be a mistake. And I certainly agree that it's not something that we want to do. We do not want to harm American workers. We do not want to harm trade between Canada and the United States. But the administration's choice to impose illegal and unacceptable tariffs, illegitimate and unacceptable tariffs to Canadian steel workers and auto workers and on the Canadian economy must be met with an equivalent response. I don't want to hurt American workers. They're our neighbors. They're our friends. But my job is to stand up for Canadian workers, Canadian interests, and I will do that without flinching. That's what I explained to the president.
That's the Canadian president there, Justin Trudeau. So a war of words coming out, really, of the G7, considering there's so much to be achieved in the world, maybe not where the rest of us wanted to see this go. My guests in the studio this morning, as I said, Omar Al-Jundi, CEO of Badia Farms, and Nigel Sillitoe, CEO of Insight Discovery. They're going to help me thrash out some of these stories. So let's start with the G7. And Nigel, well, US President Donald Trump is never shy to say what he thinks, of course, and he doesn't seem to mind upsetting his traditional allies if he thinks it's justified in terms of getting his point across. And here he is sort of throwing tact and diplomacy out of the window and again pulling out of something via Twitter while he's en route to probably the biggest diplomatic challenge that he or any US president might have faced for a long time.
Well, put it this way, nothing ever surprises me when it comes to Donald Trump. And you've got to remember that, you know, it wasn't so long back that he was calling the president of North Korea Mini Rocket. And now they're trying to patch things up and they're having this landmark meeting in Singapore later this week. So I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of days this all blows over and there are some apologies coming out. Yeah, it's a shame that it's all ended in disarray. I've never known a G7 to so quickly disrupt like this. And the picture and all the papers today says it all. You've got all these world leaders around the table, most of them with their arms crossed, which says a lot when you look at body language.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the long articles from the body language experts around that picture that you mentioned, Nigel. It was actually originally put on Angela Merkel, German Chancellor Angela Merkel's Instagram account. And there they all are, sort of around Donald Trump. And he sat back with his arms crossed, not liking what he's hearing, you would guess, from the picture. And Omar, welcome to you. Lovely to have you with us on the agenda. It's your first time, isn't it? Second. Okay.
Second
lovely
time.
To have you back. What do you make of all this? Because in some ways, back in America, while not everyone is a fan of Donald Trump, there's a lot of people who quite like the fact that he'll, number one, stick up for what he thinks for America first.
Well, you know, President Trump is... he likes to keep the world leaders and also the globe on their toes. You know, he keeps us. You cannot really predict what he'll do next, and I think that has been part of his the way he operates.
Well, it is part, you're right, of what appeals to people, isn't it? That he will say what he thinks, and it certainly keeps us entertained in terms of the news headlines.
Yeah, correct, correct. So. You don't know what went through his mind when he was going back and he heard that conference and he decided to tweet, but we'll just have to wait and see. Again, he knows how to keep himself in the news, I think.
Yeah, he absolutely does. And of course, he's going to stay in the news this week after he lands in Singapore, working towards that important meeting with Kim Jong-un on Tuesday. So I don't think Donald Trump, Georgia, is going to be far from our headlines the whole week.
Well, that is the way he likes it, for sure.
Well, to be in our headlines specifically.
Well, literally, like, he's like, when am I going to be in my eyes headlines again? This is ridiculous. And actually, he was leading the news this morning. And there's nothing like a Donald Trump sort of storm out to keep us all entertained. He definitely, I think he sees all these really, really high level diplomatic negotiations. I think he just sees them as business deals. And as a consequence, he reacts in a completely different way. He reacts like a businessman, not like a diplomat. And the world leaders, we're just not used to that in this international forum.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think depending on your opinion and your thoughts about Donald Trump, you either see it as scary or actually refreshing. So you can check out an interview that was on the Business Breakfast post G7 this morning. Is that right, Georgia?
Yes, absolutely. So we've got Ed Bell of Emirates NBD discussing the reactions that will, well, the repercussions on the global economy of these types of massive international affairs. So well worth downloading on the podcast. Just go to Business Breakfast Podcast.
Okay, well, we're going to move on from the G7 here on the agenda, although I'm sure the story will continue to rumble all day. And you'll be able to hear that, of course, on the ARN via the ARN News Centre. But we're going to move on to some other stories. So do stick with us, because next, We're going to be talking about financial advice, and you might be getting it from some unexpected people.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it on The Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
No Tom today, Claire Sharrock with you instead, alongside me Georgia Tolley as ever, of course, and two guests in the studio with us this morning for our Sunday morning news review. That's Omar Al-Jundi, he's the CEO of Badia Farms, and Nigel Sillitoe, who's the CEO of Insight Discovery. Great to have them both with us. We've already tackled the G7, as much as you can tackle the G7 and the fallout from that. We're going to move on now to some stories that the guys have spotted and brought into the studio this morning. And Nigel, if we can, we'll start with one that you spotted, and it's all about financial advice.
Sure. I was quite amused by this. It's from an online publication just the other day, which said that a financial advisory firm in the UK is going to be hiring doctors and sports people to become financial advisors, which I don't actually have an issue with, because if they're given the exams to take and they become professional advisors, then why not? So in the UK, it's been quite hard to, I think, recruit financial advisors, so hence this large firm which has 1,000 advisors decided to start looking outside the usual pool for new financial advisors. And the reason I mention this is because here in the UAE, people obviously have rather mixed views about financial advisors and also the advice given by banks. When I was here a couple of months back being interviewed by Tom, I was reviewing a new business called whichschooladvisor.com. Fantastic website, particularly if you've got kids here in the UAE. So I was joking with Tom that maybe I should launch something similar called whichfinancialadvisor.com. And surprise, surprise, I'm almost there. So in the next couple of weeks, we're going to launch this. If you look at the website now, it's actually password protected because I don't want to reveal too much. But what we're planning to do is within this website, which we've designed with a well-known law firm called Pinsent Mason, who've written all the content with regards to regulators here in the UAE, is give consumers some steer as to how to find a financial advisor, what the questions should be before you sign any contract. Obviously, there'd be a blog, there'd be loads of articles relevant to personal finance. But the key thing is, we're going to list every advisory firm under the four regulators that exist here in the UAE, such as ESCA, the Insurance Authority, etc. And that's been quite a mammoth task for us because there are over 100. So we're going to profile these firms, and we're going to, you know, offer lots of things like how many advisors there are, what's the nationalities of these advisors, when was the business set up, what areas do they specialize, is it school fees, savings plans. But the key thing is we're going to have a section about the qualifications of these advisors. And I think that's quite key. If you're a consumer in the UAE looking for financial advice, you're going to be largely steered by the qualification. So we're going to have quite a large section looking at these different exams out there from CISI, which I'm involved with, CII. There'll be obviously links to these websites so you can find out further about what these qualifications actually mean. So yes, it's been a while in the making, a couple of months, but soon I'll be in a position to launch this new website. And as I said, what it's going to hopefully do is make sure that consumers only use regulated advisors. And actually, we're going to be quite controversial. We're going to warn people about broker firms that aren't even regulated. So I know it's highly controversial, but we're going
but
to...
But it is quite overdue, Nigel,
it is
because
overdue,
I think you're
yeah.
right, it's quite a big issue here that people struggle to... You know, when I saw this report that you'd sent in, that you started off by saying that people could be retrained as financial advisors, and I think this course has accepted a mother of three returning to work, a former England youth rugby player and a PhD holder and a qualified chef are all people that have gone into financial training with this company. I wasn't too fazed by that. As long as they're trained properly,
correct.
As you say, maybe their life experience will actually make them better advisors, because sometimes you meet a financial advisor who's early 20s, fresh off the boat here in the UAE, and you think, well, how do they know? How can I trust them, you know?
Correct. So I've got nothing against someone who had a different profession, is now a financial advisor, as long as they've invested time and money to take the professional qualifications. And there are three you can take, either from the CFA, which is really hard to do, the CISI or the CII, sorry to use all these abbreviations, but those are the main exams. And that's why I wanted to launch this portal so we can actually reveal how many of these advisors at each firm have actually passed these exams. And phase two of this website, where we'll feature individual advisory firms, but the criteria is that they, one, have to work for a regulated firm, and secondly, they have to have reached quite high minimum standards of qualifications. So this is going to be a new feature in the next 2 months. This is something I've actually wanted to do quite a while, so we're nearly there, and obviously I'd love to come back another stage.
Yeah, we'll look
to,
out for it, and you can let us know when
launch
it's live.
It properly, yeah.
This is a very serious issue though, Omar, isn't it, in terms of trust in any business, like building trust and making sure that you're qualified to offer the service you are. When it's talking about people's finances and their hard-earned money, more important than anything.
Yeah, that is the tough part. How do you gain the trust? How to keep the trust? I think it all depends on the relationship and establishing that relationship, building it on the right foundation, rather than that person you think, oh, he just wants to, it's just a business transaction, or he has a different agenda. So building the relationship, building the trust is essential as well.
Particularly in this part of the world, isn't it? In terms of personal recommendations and doing business with people that you have got a personal relationship with or have been recommended to you, that's very important, isn't it?
Yeah, this part of the world, I think it's all about relationships. So the networking, the relationship. I mean, in Saudi Arabia, when we go to business meetings, maybe the first, if it's the whole meeting is half an hour, we've got 20 minutes where we're just discussing, life, kids, families, and then you'd end up doing business just the last 5-10 minutes. So relationship is key in this part of the world.
And Georgia, you've been here a while, and you work on a program which I'm sure gets a lot of feedback from listeners on financial advice. I mean, I know when I've listened to the Business Breakfast and you've talked about financial advice at all, the text line lights up, doesn't it? Because people get so... People have been caught out.
Absolutely, and it's something I feel incredibly strongly about. My husband, as soon as we arrived, he was met in his office by someone who said that they were a financial advisor and that he'd been recommended by lots of other people and how he should move his UK pension offshore. And we heard later that the person that supposedly had recommended this financial advisor felt the complete opposite, felt that they'd been completely messed over, that basically they'd had their pension taken away from them, that there were huge amounts of fees that they had no control over, and effectively they'd been locked in for 25 years under huge penalties, and that inflation would completely destroy any profit they might have made.
There's been a lot of bad publicity about those longer term things and about people being sold the wrong thing for their lifestyle, for their amount of money.
Absolutely, and I'd say if anyone is in any way considering consulting at a financial advisor, just really, really check yourself. Really check that they've been recommended, because my husband's an investment banker and he nearly got caught out. And it's very, very easy to get trapped into this sense of you're offshore and, you know, tax-free, and you get overexcited and you think you're going to get rich quick. You never get rich quick.
It sounds like it'd be a useful resource, Nigel's. Whichfinancialadvisor.com. Is that actually going to be the web address?
It is, yeah, all registered. Okay. Just not yet launched.
So I said coming
it's
soon.
Password. Yeah, so in actual fact, the idea came from this radio station literally 2 months back.
Oh, I hope we're getting a cut.
We'll negotiate later.
Okay, plenty more to come from Nigel and from Omar. And we'd love to hear from you this morning as well, 4001. What are your thoughts on the G7? What are your thoughts on financial advisors here? Have you been burnt, or have you found somebody you're really happy with who you make sure you recommend to people who might not be so lucky? Do let us know. We'd love to hear from you this morning. As I say, 4001 on the text line. Much more to come, including shortly the latest from Saudi Arabia as hundreds of women get their driving licenses.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to The Agenda. It's not Tom this morning, it's me, Claire Sharrock, with you until midday on our Sunday morning news review. Welcome along, great to have you with us. Do get in touch with the show this morning if you've got anything you want to share with us. 4001 is that number on the text line. You can also use the free Messenger app, of course, too, or you can tweet us at Dubai Eye 103. 8 FM. We've been talking about all sorts of things already this morning. We're going to move on now to a story that's been in the news, well, a lot. I've got two guests in the studio with me this morning. Omar Al-Jundi, he's the CEO of Badia Farms, and Nigel Sillitoe, he's the CEO of Insight Discovery. Great to have you both with us this morning to tear through some of these stories that we've spotted over the weekend. And Omar, let's go to one of yours. And it really has been one of the biggest stories of the last couple of months. And women drivers in Saudi Arabia. What's the latest that you've spotted?
Well, but personally, I'm very excited because I thought I'll never see this day in my lifetime. So it's extremely exciting news. We're finally joining, you know, the rest of the world, the modern world. So yeah, they started issuing licenses, and the good part is they actually, these are Saudi females who are driving in different other parts of the world. So they allowed them to go in and trade their license. So it's good. So in one, have to take a test. Two, they're like, okay, they if you have a license from another country, you could trade it in. So that was good. And again, it just shows that Saudi Arabia is finally empowering women. They're giving them a basic right, essential part to life. You know, like a mother wants to go pick up her kids from school or needs to go to the hospital. So this is something long overdue, and we're excited that it's happening, and we're excited where Saudi is going, to be honest.
When you look at the coverage that this story has had, not only in Saudi Arabia, not only in this part of the world, but all over the world, and over this weekend, I saw a lot of stories about it because hundreds of women, as you say, were exchanging their licenses that they may have got in the US or the UK or where have you. Lots of excitement internationally as well about this story. Does that feel good to see a story like that in the international press?
Of course it does, because I mean, usually then I'd say the news coming out of maybe Saudi Arabia wasn't so positive, or what wasn't portrayed in a positive way from the global media. So it is great that we are in the news for something positive and as good as this story.
So June 24th, as you say, Omar, is the day when they can actually start driving. So I guess we can expect a whole heap of coverage again then, and probably lots of photographs.
Right.
We'll look out for those. What's your take on this one, Nigel? I mean, this is a story that really has captured the headlines over and above almost where you might expect to see it. But people really going large on this story the last couple of months.
Yeah, but not just that story. Saudi is opening up so much. It's incredible how the country is being transformed. And it's something actually I think we covered in detail when I was last on this program, particularly the financial reforms and all these new cities that are being created and the expansion plans for tourism. So yeah, I'm really impressed by everything that's going on in Saudi. And of course, it was only the other day that it was announced there's going to be a new council set up between Saudi and the UAE. So that does beg the question, what's going to happen to the GCC? But I think that's a discussion maybe for another day.
Tell us more about that, Omar, because that was one of your stories as well. This partnership, and I mean, they were already close, the UAE and Saudi Arabia, but now there's a new partnership, very specific things mentioned that were going to be shared.
Yes, I just want to say, for an Arab, it is refreshing to see two Arab countries actually put a vision, put a plan, and actually follow through. So, what happened the last few days, they actually, the partnership is real, that strategic partnership, and the whole idea of it is to strengthen the ties and build a better future for the people of both countries. And I believe they want to also, Saudi Arabia wants the UAE to share experiences or how they've become a world-class country and the way they're recognized globally and the way they implement and the way they're building their country. So there's a lot that Saudi could learn from the UAE and vice versa as well. So it's just, again, it's exciting to see it happening, and it just... finally, the future is bright and positive.
Where do you see the key areas in the first instance where that partnership will start to bear fruit quite quickly?
So I don't know, but the economies of both Saudi and UAE represent a gross domestic product of $1 trillion. So there's a lot that could be done here, but they're going to be working on the economic, the human, the knowledge, the political, security, military. And you know what's exciting for me? They're establishing a JV company for agriculture investment with a capital of 5 billion dirhams. So they are, again, they want to address food security, self-sufficiency, and see how can both countries, rather than one trying to solve issues, how can they address it together and come up with something really viable, a viable solution?
I mean, we could divert actually onto one of your other stories here talking about food security, because one of the stories that you wanted to talk about was the fact that we're having to look for alternatives to some of our traditional places that we're buying our fruit and veg from because of this the virus that hit, I think it was parts of Kerala, was it?
Yes, that came up.
And so food security-wise, that means shops have had to look elsewhere. Now, the business you're in, of course, is growing stuff right here. So is that where the energy should be? What more can we do to look after our own food security in this part of the world?
Correct. The ultimate solution would be growing it in our backyard and having an eye, close eye to not using any chemicals, not using any pesticides. And it's an industry at its infancy stage. So I think the government is just taking a backseat and just waiting to see who are the winners, who are going to be able to come and actually build a modern farm that would actually address again these issues. But yeah, what's good here is that the ministry is and the outlook and is alert to what's happening globally, and if anything comes up, they're informing the customs or informing the customer itself. Because I believe last summer as well, there was a similar story where there was produce coming in from Jordan, Egypt, and a few other countries where they found that they had a certain amount of pesticides above the acceptable limit. So it's glad to see. It's comforting to know that the ministry is on alert and
monitoring these things for us consumers. Right. Yeah, absolutely. So where's the future of developing, growing more stuff here? Because obviously that's the business you're in. Yeah. Where can we go? How much can we grow here? Because obviously climate is against us.
Yeah, well, you can work around climate. And the beauty is you've got science and technology has advanced so much. We could actually overcome these harsh conditions. So we could grow indoors. We could grow with no soil. We could actually, because of technology, you could create the optimal conditions for the plants to grow all year round. So I believe we're there, and that's part of our vision and plan, and to roll out these facilities and to show the people and the government that it could be done. And that's when I believe people or investors will come into the industry, and government will start supporting it on a much larger scale.
Because as a consumer, Georgia, I don't know about you, but I look at where something's come from, and I get really uncomfortable if it's from the US or somewhere else really far away, and I think there must be somewhere nearer I can fly this produce in from.
So for me, it's less about, I don't worry about air miles quite in the same way, but for me, I just want it to be cheaper. And if you look in the supermarkets, 9 times out of 10, even if it's organic produce, if it's produced in the UAE, it's just, a huge amount cheaper. And I've just been looking on your website, the Badia Farms website, and I was like, vertical farming, what on earth are they talking about? But it just looks so awesome. You're just growing salad and things like that under lights in rows,
leafy greens on a stack up system, and then it's rolls. You've got your rows, you've got LED lighting to mimic the sun with a special spectrum. You recycle 90% of water. And honestly, the taste of the leafy greens, I should have brought some with me. Yeah, it's Ramadan.
We can choose.
Next time.
Next time. But the fact we don't spray it with any pesticides, you can tell in the freshness and the taste. And then it makes you wonder if the products or the produce that we get in from different countries, how much...
Well, I mean, some of it, you've got leafy greens coming from Spain. I mean, I feel tired after a flight from Spain. I can't imagine how the lettuce feels.
leafy greens, we could roll it through vertical farms, and that's solved. Next would be tomato, capsicum, chilies, strawberries, and then so on and go forth. And
why aren't more people doing it then? Is it expensive to get started, or what's the...
Excellent question. Okay. Well, two big reasons. One, the capex is high. And two, it's a long-term investment. So you won't get your money back in 10 to 10, 12 years. So unless you're passionate and you love it, it's tough to attract people to
But is the government involved. Is the government throwing its weight behind it? Do you get government support for your...
We didn't get any support in terms of subsidies or special rates, but we're in close talks with the government. And again, I think they're... Because a lot of companies, a lot of vertical firms tried to set up but failed. So they're waiting to see who's going to be the winner, and they're waiting to see what would be the next step, what we're going to do. But we're in close talks with the government, and the minister himself, Dr. Thani Al Ziyudi, came and inaugurated the farm March 1st. So that was a great support for us.
Yeah, real stamp of approval there.
So exciting times for farming, but also, as we were saying, exciting times for Saudi Arabia. And I can't finish off this conversation without talking about the fact that you're going to be in the opening match, of course, of the World Cup coming up. How do you feel about that? Are you a football fan, first of all, Omar? Otherwise, maybe you're not going to be excited by that at all.
No. Football is a big sport in Saudi Arabia. We're very excited, and we are glad. We've just played Germany over the weekend. We only lost 2-1, which is great. We believe which is a progress from
England would take that against Germany. Don't worry.
So we're all excited. It's a big event. Our crown prince is going to be at the match. So yeah, we're supporting our team, and we're very excited, and we hope we could perform well, like we did in the US in 1994.
I'm sure, and I think the whole region will be getting behind you, because it's good to have some local interest. But as you say, yes, your Crown Prince going over there, invited personally, I believe, by President Putin.
So, yes, correct.
There's a whole political side going on that opening match as well, all starting, of course, next week, I think it is, and we'll be catching up with Chris McCarty later in the programme, just after 11:30, if you want to hear the latest and all the sporting action. Stick with us here on The Agenda. Coming back shortly, I think we're going to be talking about gratuity.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
No, Tom, today, Claire and Georgia with you on The Agenda. And, of course, we're talking about, all sorts, because it's our Sunday morning news review. And while we're at it, let's tell you, of course, what you can do if you're super busy and you don't always have time to listen to the full shows that you love. The good news is that you can now download two very exciting podcasts on a daily basis. Check out the bite-sized Business Breakfast and the Super Tight Sports Tonight, both available on the Dubai Eye website. That's DubaiEye1038.com or via iTunes. And Georgia, I overheard the Business Breakfast guys recording.
Oh, yes.
I have to say, I was giggling. So it's worth a listen today. So I was giggling just by them, their little intros and what have you.
You do get there. Basically, they go off into the studio together, into Studio 2. And they start, it's just two of them each time. And they do have their own original material. It's not just from the program. They have their own, and they're a bit more relaxed when they're in Studio 2 than when they're on air. So you do get some extra sort of nuggets.
Yes, ad-libbing going on.
Yeah, lots about their own lives.
Which, always worth a listen. That's DubaiEye1038.com or via iTunes. You'll find the Business Breakfast and Sports Tonight bite-size, both of those. What else, Georgia?
Oh, well, I sound a bit out of it, because at the moment I'm just logging in to Dubai Eye's Songs of Summer website. Basically, I'm signing up myself, and it's asking me lots of questions, so I just need to concentrate on. Focus on the radio. Essentially, we're trying something new and really exciting here at the station at Dubai Eye 103.8, and we want you guys to be involved. Essentially, from July, we're going to start playing songs. We're going to start playing music, the songs of the summer, and we want your help to try and choose the playlist, basically. And all you need to do is go onto the website, go onto our page, Dubai Eye 103.8. You can take part in a quick quiz, and that gives you the chance to say which music you want to listen to. And as a thank you, you can also win a fabulous family holiday for four to Sicily. So even though I've logged in, though, and I'm doing the quiz, apparently I can't win because
no,
I'm a member of staff.
That would be wrong. But what is your song of the summer?
Oh, I really like Pharrell, Happy.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah. It's one of my favourite tracks.
I could really throw our guests in it now. Nigel Sillitoe of
Quick
Insight Discovery and Omar Al-Jundi of Badia Farms. Summer song?
Dear. Unfortunately, my preference is always rock. So I don't think it's highly appropriate for the summer.
How about you can listen to rock, good rock anytime. What about you, Omar? Got a song of the summer?
You know, it's a funny one. Girls just wanna have fun now.
And he sang it as well.
Yeah, I like Will Smith's Summertime. He's nice. Pretty awesome. Like,
Omar gets surprised because
he actually sang. Yeah, I'm not going to sing that. Would put people off.
Let's squeeze another story in that we spotted over the weekend. And Nigel, one of yours. This it's all talking about gratuity and whether companies are actually dealing with it wisely.
Sure. Thanks, Claire. There have been quite a few articles, actually, this week. One yesterday in College Times headline was How Firms Can Cope with Gratuity. And this largely sourced quotes from a well-known regulated financial advisory firm here, which I think is evidence they're moving more into the corporate space as well as dealing with personal individuals. And it actually came up with some really interesting ideas. As many people will be aware, companies here don't really make a provision for this growing liability of gratuity. So they either keep the cash funds in the business and then withdraw when people leave, for example, or they do park it to one side and maybe just put it in a bank deposit account, which isn't actually accruing much interest. So this article comes up with a couple of ideas, and one is that the money, if separated, should simply be invested into a low risk asset, normally a mutual fund that's held in trust overseas, for example, which does tend to make sense, and that would actually be good news generally for the asset management business, which do offer these low to medium risk products. And also the article did suggest that maybe what they could do, when you get your pay slip, there's an extra line which actually shows the value of your gratuity, because this would actually allow employees to recognize that this pot of money, which grows over time, is never going to replace retirement, of course, but is there to be accessed at a later date.
That could help with loyalty, couldn't it?
Yes,
as well,
it does.
Because people are going to see that and see that it's growing the longer that they're committed to that company.
Correct, 100%. And there was another article in Arabian Business, quotes Peter Cox, who's head of international pension plans at Zurich. I have to add the disclaimer, I do the PR for Zurich just to let everyone know, but he came up with some good ideas, and that is from an employer perspective, longer service means higher liabilities. I'm just quoting this from the Arabian Business article. So if you take a salary of 30,000 dirhams per month, basic salary, then over 10 years, the liability for that company will exceed 250,000 dirhams, okay? Not many companies, unfortunately, make that provision. They take it out of cash reserves when someone leaves. So gratuity is still a thorny issue, and hopefully there will be a change one day soon, and it will become mandatory for companies to actually park this liability and do something with this liability. Hopefully have it managed professionally, as I said, and maybe medium to low risk fund.
As long as it stays secure, I guess, so that they don't lose their employees' money, because I guess otherwise you're looking at a big sort of scandal of the type that we've had in, say, the UK and the US, the big pension scandals where it's been misinvested, I
Correct.
Guess.
But I think in the local laws, there's a provision which says that the employee can be no worse off if an alternative is offered, for example. And having done a bit of research on this subject, if you are an employee and you have concerns about gratuity, then a couple of questions you might want to ask your head of HR, for example. One is, I see my end of service benefit entitlement as deferred pay, much like a pension entitlement. In other developed economies, there's a legislative requirement for pension liabilities to be funded. Why are you not funding and protecting my end of service benefit in the same way? I think that'd be a really good question to ask your head of HR.
So they would pay them, they would
park it to one side.
So park, okay.
Yeah, because what happens sometimes is if a company goes bust, yeah, and you've been at this organization for 15 years, you're not going to get your gratuity.
That was going to be my question.
Oh, really?
How do they address that, you know, especially if a company goes bankrupt?
You mean if they've got to pay out to everyone at the same time, how do they do that? Or if they've gone bankrupt?
No, the company has gone bankrupt.
Yeah.
out of business.
No, what? No, then unfortunately you're unlikely to get your gratuity, which is why there needs to be this change in legislation, because gratuity was set up many decades back to really help people when they leave the country to go back to home, so it will cover their flights and transport costs, etc.
So you say the government has to step in and legislate?
Yeah, everyone has asked, and this will happen one day, for there to be new legislation which will force companies here to protect this gratuity for their employees. And some airlines, I won't mention them, have actually done this already and parked this liability offshore. Sometimes they add to the contribution made for gratuity, because it then helps with retaining staff, particularly in certain sectors.
It becomes a staff perk.
Yes, it's
just
a staff perk. Yeah.
That could be a good opportunity for investment firms to offer specific products.
Oh, don't worry, that's happening. That's a good point, Omar. So loads of people are looking or have already provided alternative solutions to gratuity, where they will set up the trust, they will manage the money, and also give the employees access online to evaluation, so they can see what the value of their gratuity is. And sometimes either the employee will add to that, or the employee, him or herself, can add maybe part of their bonus. So it's like a savings pot.
Oh, okay, but companies can say, okay, great, I will put the funds aside. But on the other hand, how could you support me to receive my outstandings, my receivable out in the market? So on one end, you're putting legislation in place, but on the other hand, you'll say, okay, I'll park this money, but I actually need it for my working capital.
That's the problem.
So how are you going to help me obtain my receivables and outstandings out in the
Correct.
Market?
And that's the issue, because if you're the CFO, you won't necessarily want to come up with an alternative.
And that's the debate, isn't it?
Correct.
Finding the medium between those two, particularly for small businesses, I think it can be a problem if they do need the cash flow, as Omar says. Plenty more to come. Let's know your thoughts on gratuity. 4001 if you want to get in touch. It's coming to the end of the first hour of our show. Of course, we're with you through until midday. So do stick with us. We're going to be talking food and we're going to be talking sport. It's a Sunday morning news review here on the agenda on Dubai Eye 103.8. Claire Sharrock here with you. Georgia Tolley also here. And two guests joining us in the studio to sift through some of the stories of the weekend. That's Omar Al-Jundi. He's the CEO of Badia Farms here in the UAE. And Nigel Sillito, CEO of Insight Discovery. Great to have you both with us this morning, guys.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hope you've been enjoying the conversation so far. We've had our teeth into what? G7, women drivers in Saudi. We've been talking about farming, Omar. We've had a couple of messages in on that, which we will get to very, very soon. And then we were talking about gratuity there as well. And a couple of messages in on that, Nigel, asking about what about my if I've got a maximum gratuity that I've gained over 30 years in a company. Well, I'd say you'd be doing well then if they'd invested it, right?
Correct. But unfortunately, it is capped at 2 years of your salary. But if they had invested it in a, let's say, low to medium risk fund, yeah, I would have delivered pretty sound performance over that period of time.
That's just one of the stories we're tackling this morning. Gratuity. Are companies doing enough to protect our gratuity, to accrue for our gratuity? Should they be investing to make more of that money so that we do better out of it when we do come to the end of our service? 4001 if you want to get involved this morning. Give us a call if you'd like, 423 1010. Also use the free messenger app or tweet us, of course, at Dubai Eye 1038 FM. In about 20-25 minutes, we're going to be catching up with Chris McCarty. He's the head of sport here at ARN, of course, and lots to catch up on after a very busy weekend of sports, so looking forward to hearing what he has to say about that. Let's move on to one of our other stories that we're looking at this morning. And Nigel, this could spell the end of the flea market, which over the last few years in the UAE has become massive. I mean, I don't know if you've been to one of these flea markets at the parks.
I have, yeah, they're fun.
Chaos.
Yep.
I mean, they are fun, but they are also chaos. They're absolutely packed with people looking for a bargain and selling off their stuff. And I guess because we're in quite a transient community in terms of people coming out maybe for a short period of time or moving on after a year or two often, that sort of second-hand market is thriving. And now we're looking at being able to not go and fight with the crowds and do it online. Am I right?
Correct. Yeah, everything seems to be moving online. So I was drawn to this article, again, in Arabian Business. It's about Yala Bargain. It's a new UAE online platform for used products. So it's kind of like eBay, but it's now here in the UAE. And what I found encouraging is that this business had spent 6 months doing lots of research, which was music to my ears. They interviewed about 5,000 people to find out what they wanted. And now, if you're a verified member of yellowbargain.com, you can sell or rent your products to other members of that platform. So it is pretty unique here in the UAE, but also they act as an online sales channel to secondhand retail businesses and product rental companies like car rental companies, for example. So I thought it was quite an interesting business. And that's fact, in the same day, but in a different publication, Gulf News, there's a Singaporean business called Carousel, which does exactly the same thing. It's a flea market online. And the founder rejected an offer for his business about 3 years ago for $100 million. At the time, he was only 26. Now, his business is worth about $500 million. He has expanded into other countries in Asia besides Singapore. But clearly, Yellow Bargain might be onto something given what's happening in other parts of the world with regards to putting things on this flea market. I did have a quick look myself. There were shirts, for example, which were selling for just 30 dirhams. So these are all used items, but there are bargains to be had. I think they've got about 1,200 items at the moment, and that number is growing.
Anything from the guys that are running it on how they're going to verify the quality of things? Because obviously that's one of the big issues, isn't it? And on eBay, I think you get a ranking if you're known to send stuff that is in the condition you've described it as. But are we in danger, possibly here, if they don't regulate it very well, of having something in not great condition turning up and delivered when you thought you were getting something else?
Yeah, good point. This article, unfortunately, doesn't cover that, but I'd be amazed if over time they don't have a rating system on the seller.
Because, I mean, you know, so obviously buying secondhand goods is very popular here. We've all been doing it when we first moved here. Maybe we look on Dubizzle for something big. Maybe we go to the flea markets. It's not surprising, really, to see it move online. I mean, that's where a lot of shopping is going. But in terms of replacing flea markets, are you missing out on a lot of the sort of atmosphere and the haggling and the fun of that?
Yeah, it wouldn't be much fun at this time of year with the heat. So I think there is definitely a role for these sort of online platforms. But you're right, when the weather's beautiful, why would you want to do it online? It's better to actually go to a real flea market.
Are you surprised it's taken this long for an app like this, Omar? I mean, for me, this seems like something that they would have come up with quite a while ago.
It, yeah, I mean, it takes it. It takes time to bring in the customers, the users, the ensure the industry is developed to a certain point for other type of businesses to come in. So it's just I think it's just a matter of time.
Do you think you would buy something like this via an app when you hadn't seen it, but you just sort of got a description of it? The guy's registered on there. He's been okayed. I think you said verified,
yeah, verified,
did you?
Yeah, verified,
would you buy something that way, do you think?
It depends. It depends on the product. So maybe something, yeah, it depends on the product, but it could come in handy for sure, yeah.
What about you, Nigel?
I would certainly consider it, yeah, for sure.
Georgia?
I'm a massive eBay fan, so I'm already happy to bid for secondhand clothes and things like that. I'd go for it.
And have you ever had anything that had... Yeah, exactly. Have you ever had anything come through that wasn't of the standard that you had been led to believe?
No, everything's been of the right standard. I think eBay and Airbnb and these sort of peer-reviewed websites, they really restore your faith in humanity. Because, I mean, I've had over 1,000 transactions on eBay now and about 8 on Airbnb, and I'm yet to find a bad egg. Literally, everyone seems to be straight up, honest. They send things when they say they're going to, and there's no trying to sort of, you know, overcharge you.
Swindle.
Swindle,
yeah.
Exactly. So I'm pretty impressed by these types of things.
And are you a seller as well, or
yes,
just a buyer?
Oh yeah, when we left the UK, I basically sold about a quarter of my husband's possessions. I was like, well, you won't need these. He does like to buy...
I was
going
to say, did he know that you were selling
them?
Yeah,
he likes to buy sports equipment that he then doesn't use. And so, and there's a lot of trainers in our lives. He's in between a 10 and an 11 shoe size wise, and he always manages to buy a size that's wrong with him. All his shoes are either too small or too big, and he wears them once, realises that they're the wrong size, and then I sell them on eBay. including the ill-fated Birkenstocks.
I can't say I would buy second-hand shoes.
But they're basically brand new. He walked in the pair of Birkenstocks. I was like, they're going to have to go. Still had the box, sold them for almost the same amount as he bought them for.
Do you get to keep the money?
Yeah, yeah, I get to keep the money. Yes, it stays in my PayPal account. Then. It's ideal.
You keep them. So he buys them, and then
yes.
You keep the money.
Yeah.
Well, she's onto something there, isn't she?
Totally.
Let us know what you think. Would you use the service? That's Yalla Bargain. I assume is it related to the guys that do Yalla Compare or anything like that?
Again, this article doesn't talk about their
own
businesses.
They've just utilised that well-known Arabic phrase, Omar, again, the Yalla. Hurry up.
Yalla.
Yeah, only you can say it so nicely.
Yeah.
But let us know, would you buy something in that way, 4001? Would you rather use an app that go muscle it up with everybody else, getting your elbows in out at the flea markets? Because they do get really, really busy, don't they? And if you don't like crowds, they might not be your thing. Okay, well, that's that one. Coming up next, we're going to be talking food. Omar's got some suggestions if you want to wow your guests for Eid this weekend.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. On the Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are talking about it this morning. We're talking about all sorts of things because it's our Sunday morning news review. Claire in for Tom today and for the next couple of days with you here on the Agenda. In the studio with me this morning, Omar Al-Jundi, CEO of Badia Farms, and Nigel Sillitoe, CEO of Insight Discovery. We talked about lots already, including the G7 summit, which ended in some disarray, really, because Donald Trump decided he didn't want to join the joint communique. And there was a bit of a war of words on Twitter from him, talking about Canada's President Justin Trudeau. He is en route to Singapore, we know that. And according to Simon Marks, of course, is our correspondent from the US, and we heard from him earlier on that G7 summit, he has just tweeted that Kim Jong-un has arrived in Singapore ahead of that much talked about summit, which will take place between President Trump and Kim Jong-un on the leader of North Korea, of course, on Tuesday. So thanks for that, Simon. Good to keep us updated on Twitter. So that's all happening, or it is so far. I mean, who knows what could happen between now and Tuesday?
I mean, there's nothing to say that Donald Trump will meet them. And both of the world leaders in this meeting are completely unpredictable. So, I mean,
they're prone to offend each other easily. Yes.
Well, yes, exactly. And they're prone to posturing, shall we say.
Good word. Yes, they are. They are. Omar, we were talking earlier about farming, and we were talking about farming and food security here in the UAE and this region, in fact, and how in order to increase our food security and increase what we grow here, we need to look at new ways of farming. And you were talking about your vertical farming and hydroponics and things like that. So we've had a couple of messages in. And this one says this, no name on it, by the way, but growing things without soil is tasteless. Fact. I've tried it from the supermarket. You need soil. Hydroponics without soil makes food that's like chewing cardboard. What say you to that?
Yeah, interesting comment. Well, it depends on the farm, the grower who was using the hydroponic technology, because just hydroponic is one part. You're growing with no soil, but then you have to put in the correct nutrients. You have to have the correct climate in the greenhouse. So maybe they were not growing in soil, but they're not putting the correct nutrients, not putting not having the right the optimal environment for the plants. So you know, we're growing it perfectly, and the taste is amazing. The chefs, the feedback has been extremely positive. So I'll invite them to come, or we can send them a sample of our lettuce and leafy greens.
I mean, it's a science, isn't it? Hydroponics, growing things like that, agricultural science. Everything has to be correct. It's like making a cake. If you miss one ingredient, the taste is horrible.
Yeah, very good point, because everyone thinks, you know, it's farming and growing is very easy. You just put the seed, put a bit of water. But no, it is a science. The plants are very sensitive, and they require specific ingredients at specific time, whether it's climate, sun, nutrients, you name it.
And I guess also, as with any type of agricultural science, you could go for the mass production side, which might mean that you use more chemicals or you use more dirty farming techniques. It depends how you choose to organise and run your farm, right? But you can do it very cleanly.
Very, very correct. Yeah, very, very good point. So again, it's techniques do you use? How are you growing your plants? What type of greenhouse? Is it low tech? Is it high tech? What type of data are you collecting? What type of tests are you doing? So it's a science on its own.
Mm. Thank you to Wayne for your message. Yes, picked me up correctly. Justin Trudeau is not the President of Canada, he's the Prime Minister. Thank you, Wayne. Sorry for that. I was talking about presidents at the time. Just came out of my mouth.
It's too
what
easy
are you
going to
do? It's too easy to do. But thank you for that, Wayne, for keeping an eye on me. and someone says, is George's husband going to appear on eBay soon?
I yes, why not?
And what would you get for him?
I could pitch him. I mean, it would only be a rental exercise because I want him back. Like you can have him for an afternoon to mend something, or you know, he does law, so he could maybe buy a contract for you.
Okay, he could be quite useful to rent out.
I'll rent him on an hourly basis, but no, I need him around.
Okay, well, she could be using the new app that we discussed earlier to do that. Yellow bargain. He's a bargain lawyer, bargain husband. So before I let you go, Omar, I did promise everybody that we were going to give them some ideas for unusual things that they could serve for their Eid feasts, and this is because one of the stories that you spotted was all about unique vegetables that could look amazing when you serve them. Do tell.
Yeah, well, but you know, in any farm you produce a lot of crops, and unfortunately we've gotten used to only receiving the perfect crop or the perfect tomato, but the farm itself could produce a lot of tomatoes that are non-uniform in shape. And the idea now is to make sure we don't have any waste, and you give your customers or your clients a memorable dining experience by serving these non-uniform, you know, crops or products. And you know, the way I would relate this to us is because we are able to, we have the perfect environment and the optimal environment, so we were able to test other varieties, and these varieties are not genetically modified. These are farmers or breeders in Europe that spend maybe 10, 15 years trying to master marrying a lemon plant with a basil plant. So we're growing here lemon basil, cinnamon basil, chocolate mint, and then again, the feedback has been outstanding. The chefs are loving it. You know, if you're looking for a different experience in this coming Eid, you can contact our exclusive distributor in the UAE, Classic Fine Foods. They would provide you with all these and more as well.
Interesting that you mentioned as well using the stuff that doesn't necessarily look picture perfect, and there's a really big drive, isn't there, to stop us being so ridiculously elitist when we come to choosing our fruit and veg. It doesn't have to all look perfectly shaped to be good and nutritious, and in a world where so much food is wasted, that's really important, right? There's a whole Twitter feed I follow called Ugly Fruit and Veg, and it's all about I don't look good but I do taste good.
I think we've been spoiled as consumers, and I think in Europe right now they have a whole section for you know, non-uniform, I don't want to call them ugly, also they're just non-uniform produce at a lesser price, but it ensures there's zero waste and it tastes the same thing, so why not?
Yeah, I think some of the supermarkets are actually doing it here as well. I've spotted sort of bags of slightly misshapen capsicum and things like that. And as you say, a lot cheaper. So for you, Georgia, when you're always thinking, you know, I don't want to pay too much for this, it's a cheaper way at the moment to shop because most people are still going for the uniform shiny stuff.
Yeah. So Kipson's, which is an online service, they do it. And Spinney's has ugly fruit bags. Mixed. Sometimes they're fruit. They're mixed.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it's branded wrong. We should stop calling it ugly.
I think it's just, it gives a negative.
Yeah, exactly. This is just like how nature intended, right?
Reclaim the word ugly when it comes to fruit and veg. That means, you know, make it positive.
Yeah, different, just different food or different.
Yeah.
So what should people be looking out for when they're picking their fruit and veg so they know they're getting something that's as good as possible? If we can't tell by looking at it, it doesn't matter what it looks like. Should we be avoiding like overly shiny stuff because it's got wax and chemicals on, for example?
No, honestly, I think that the only thing you can find out is if you try it. So you got to make sure, one, you're seeing the farm that's and the country. So once you get these two, and then you could say, okay, now I've tried this from and it tastes good. Oh, this doesn't taste. And I think that's the only way.
We're all going to be shopping, pushing our trolleys around, taking bites out of things. But again, a lot of supermarkets are now offering tastes, aren't they? And that
they are
important, I think, because how do I know what that tastes like if I can't have a...
I'm looking forward to visiting Omar's farm.
Are you going to visit?
Yeah.
Good for
definitely.
You.
We've already agreed.
Yeah.
My father will not buy a bunch of grapes without eating one of them. He goes around Waitrose, he goes around all the supermarkets basically snaffling grapes.
testing.
That's his excuse, testing.
Yes, testing.
Right. Well, listen. Well, good luck with it, Omar. And we look forward to the day when we can buy your lettuces and leafy greens. But at the moment, we can enjoy them at the cities, in the, some of the city's big hotels, where the chefs are loving your produce.
Correct.
Okay, yes. Thanks very much for being with us. That's Omar Al-Jundi, CEO of Badia Farms. And also thanks to Nigel Sillitoe, CEO of Insight Discovery. Lovely to have you with us again,
Thank you, Claire. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your stories, guys. Lots more to come, of course, because we've got a lot of sport to get through. And Chris McCarty is in the studio next.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Great to have you with us on The Agenda this morning. It's not Tom today. He is away today, tomorrow and Tuesday. So it's me, Claire Sharrock, with you through until midday. So we've only got about half an hour of the show left. But that's okay, because it's time to talk sport. And, well, it was a busy, busy weekend. 4001, let us know what you were watching. Love to hear from you this morning. Thanks for your questions so far on all the topics we've been discussing. In the studio with me now, though, is Chris McCarty, head of sport here at AIR. And, of course, good morning, Chris.
A very good morning to you too, Claire. Nice to see you.
Did you get any sleep this weekend? Because it was... It's funny because, you know, you think the football season's over. Oh, it'll be peaceful. And I know we're about to have a World Cup. We'll get to that. But I found myself quite glued to a lot of sporting action this weekend.
There was an awful lot to get through. Yes, the Golden State Warriors, I guess, kicking things off with an NBA title. Then came a very busy weekend of Rugby Union Internationals. We had the French Open women's final yesterday as well. The Formula One late last night, qualifying for the Canadian Grand Prix. So the short answer to your question is I've not slept that much.
Yeah, no, you look a bit scruffy, if I'm honest.
Thanks for that, Claire. I do need to find time to get a haircut and a shave before the World Cup.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not going to get any better, is it?
It's not.
Where shall we start? I know what I spent my day yesterday doing. That was rugby. I think we'll get to that a little bit later. Should we start with the French Open? Because it's absolutely wonderful to see a new champion
Absolutely.
In the women's game.
Yeah, and deservedly so as well. It's a big congratulations to the world number one, the Romanian Simona Halep, a case of fourth time lucky for the 26-year-old. She defeated yesterday Sloane Stephens, the American, 3-6, 6-4, 6-1. It was a fantastic final. I watched it from start to finish, and Simona Halep deserves an awful lot of credit. She lost that opening set. You could have forgiven her for that point for thinking, well, I'm never going to win a Grand Slam title. She lost the French Open back in 2014 to Maria Sharapova. She lost last year to the unseeded Yelena Ostapenko. She was beaten by Caroline Wozniacki in the Australian Open final earlier this year, but she came back, aggressive ground strokes, thoroughly deserving, and I don't think this will be her last. She is someone that I think will gain an awful lot of confidence from her performance yesterday, the first of what I expect to be a few more over the course of her career.
This is her reaction after, Chris. She was, well, super happy.
It's a special moment. I was dreaming for this moment since actually I started to play tennis. It's my favorite Grand Slam, and I've always said that if I am going to win one, I want to be here, so it's real now.
It must be quite a weight of pressure when you are the world number one and you haven't managed to convert into... It happens in golf as well, doesn't it? They can be number one for a long time and not convert it into a major, and that's
exactly
what it's all about.
Exactly that. We saw the same pressure mount on Caroline Wozniacki. It's getting that monkey off the back, isn't it? And we saw that, you know, Sloane Stephens, who actually defeated her compatriot Madison Keys in the final of the US Open at the back end of 2017. She just looked a lot more relaxed in her surroundings yesterday, and it's amazing what confidence, the momentum that you get. And now that the pressure is off Simona Halep, she can swing a little freer, and as I say, I do expect her to go on now and not dominate the women's game, because the women's game is so open, but certainly go on and win more Grand Slams before she hangs up her racket.
And we'll just stick with the French Open, because there's a small matter of the men's match today, and of course just the greatest really ever clay champion, if I can call him that, but I can, I'm sure, right? He's won 10 of them.
He's won 10. He's 10-0 in French Open finals is Rafael Nadal, and he is into yet another final. He will be bidding for his 11th title over at Roland Garros. He is taking on the man that many believe will one day take on that mantle as the French Open king, in the shape of Dominic Thiem, the Austrian. I think it will be a stretch too far. Anyone that watched Rafa Nadal in Friday's semi-final against Juan Martín del Potro, he was impeccable, to say the least, serving beautifully, moving wonderfully, and that forehand of his, it really is one of the most poetic shots in all of tennis. So I expect him to win. He might lose a set today. I think the first set is vital if Dominic Thiem is to have any chance. If he loses it, and I expect him to lose that opening set to Rafa Nadal, it could be a short afternoon. But I do maybe think he will take one set. Four sets for me. Rafa Nadal will be winning an 11th French Open title. That will move him on to 17 Grand Slams, just three behind his great rival Roger Federer.
Considering he's had quite a lot of time out of injury, that is incredible. We'll be keeping you up to date on that match, of course, on Dubai Eye 103.8. I'm going to skip forward just a couple and come back to, you know, on your list of sports, Chris, because Jürgen has texted in. Yes, Jürgen, we're getting to it. Let me talk you through my day yesterday. I didn't watch them all, but my husband decided that he had to watch every single rugby international. So I came home in the morning to find the blackout curtains across. And this was 11 o'clock in the morning and they never opened. And he thoroughly enjoyed watching New Zealand beat France. He thoroughly enjoyed watching Australia and Ireland. He did not enjoy so much watching what Jürgen wants to talk about, which is South Africa beating England in an incredible match.
It was. I'm almost gutted that I missed it. Robbie and I were playing in a five-a-side football tournament last night, so we were keeping an eye on the scores on the video printer, on the live scores, and could not believe what we were reading. It finished in Johannesburg yesterday. South Africa 42, England 39. Now, England jumped out to a 21-point lead in a matter of moments in that first half. It was extraordinary scenes. Full credit to South Africa, the Springbok, because we were discussing it at length on the grill yesterday. Carl van Roosevelt, one of our pundits, a proud SAF, and he was very much of the opinion that England were going to roll South Africa over. It wasn't to be. The defending at times was atrocious. I've watched the highlights, but sometimes we need defending to be atrocious to produce these thrillers, and that was an absolute classic.
Well, you could have thoroughly enjoyed it because you wouldn't have been supporting either team, really. You know, exactly because there were just so many tries, so much action. Yeah, ill discipline led to and really. Lovely part to the story as well is the South Africa captain, Siwe Kolisi, I think
that's
his name
one.
Is, the first ever black man to captain South Africa, which was an incredible moment, really.
Absolutely, it is. In 137 years as well of South African rugby, we were talking at length about it there on merit. He's had a wonderful season, so he has. He's a very eloquent young man as well, and it is fantastic to see. And what it is, more than that, what are we 14 months out from a World Cup, a Rugby World Cup, that is? The fact that Australia turning over Ireland, many people of whom think Ireland can go all the way and beat the All Blacks to that World Cup. South Africa coming back and beating England. That's a fourth successive defeat for England as well. So one or two questions being asked now of Eddie Jones and his team. Was on the WhatsApps to Mike Brown last night, and he said that once again, penalties costing England. 17-4 was the penalty count for England against South Africa. That's not good enough. So it's individual mistakes that are costing England. They're not too far away from my reckoning. 14 months out, Eddie Jones is all about trying to ensure that his squad is ready to try and take on the world and win that World Cup next year.
Must have been frustrating for Mike Brown because he had a really good match.
He did.
Also, talking of the World Cup, Japan
34-17 over Italy.
Yeah, absolutely nailed Italy.
It's a great story, this, and the fact that they've now got a Super Rugby side, that they'll be hosting the World Cup, and Italy, I've been questioning Italy for the past few months now. Conor O'Shea is the coach there, and I just don't think they're making the necessary strides forward. They're actually going backwards a little bit, are Italy. So great victory for that. I don't want to take anything away from Japan. There's a feel-good factor around their rugby right now, and the eyes of the world will be upon Japan in 14 months' time for that World Cup.
We are going to get to the Football World Cup, I promise. I'm going to keep Chris here towards the end of the show, so we will get to that, but I want to do that at the end, really, because let's talk about some of the other live stuff. And we were watching Formula One last night.
We were qualifying late last night. It's over in Canada, so you've got to stay up late once again this evening if you want to watch that Formula One Grand Prix. The big headlines, I guess, Sebastian Vettel, he will start on pole. Valtteri Bottas, not Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes, will start second. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull third. And isn't it refreshing that we've got a 1-2-3 different men with different teams? And I think it just shows you right now there's a bit of a leveller in the world of F1. Lewis Hamilton will start down in fourth. He was well off the pace, in fact, 0.232 seconds off the pace. So work to be done for Mercedes overnight, and looking forward to this one. It will be the Ferrari of Sebastian Vettel who will go out on pole for the Canadian Grand Prix.
Does feel a little less boring.
Yeah,
so far this season,
little less
can
boring,
I say that?
Little less predictable, all things that Formula
predictable
One needs.
Predictable is a better word, yes.
Predictable is. But it's refreshing, isn't it, Claire? Because we've sat here over the past couple of years. It was Vettel for a while, Lewis Hamilton. Then for me, there was the manufactured rivalry between Hamilton and Rosberg. What we have now is genuine rivalries, not just amongst the drivers within their teams, but we have genuine rivalries now between the teams themselves. Ferrari, Mercedes and Red Bull. We have three genuine title contenders. It makes for a thrilling season. And despite despite the fact that Monaco Grand Prix was dull a fortnight or so ago, over the piece thus far, if you think Baku, if you think Shanghai, the races have been fantastic, Bahrain as well, so I'm looking forward to the season moving forward, and the fact that it's Vettel, Bottas and Verstappen 1-2-3 today, I think just underlines what an incredible and open year it's going to be.
Is the Abu Dhabi race the final one again?
It is, yeah, back
okay,
end of
so
November.
Great if it does manage to build up to and a how, good crescendo
how
there.
Wonderful would it be if we had ideally the full six men, the full gamut of individuals with a chance of winning in Abu Dhabi. I would take that just for it to be open, I think, more than anything, Claire, for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix to have the title on the line would once again make us all pour down to the capital and watch a thrilling race.
Okay, let's talk NBA.
NBA, I guess the big story from the weekend, Golden State Warriors have created a dynasty, as they say over in the States, a third NBA title in 4 years. Kevin Durant, once again, superb. Steph Curry, superb. It was a blowout victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers in that game four. They've clean sweeped LeBron James and his merry men. LeBron James afterwards admitting that he basically played games 2, 3 and 4 with a broken hand. That was after he got his frustrations got a little bit the better of him after game one. He himself has said that he doesn't know now where his future will be next year. Some suggestions that he may move on in search of NBA titles and leave his home team. He did it once before, remember? He joined the Miami Heat. He could be about to do it once again at the age of 33, because despite getting to an 8th successive NBA Finals, Claire, what matters at the end of someone's career is those NBA rings. It is the titles. And that man, having reached, is it 9? I think it is. He's only won 3. So he's got an awful lot to do before he can hang up his running shoes or his basketball shoes and say, I am the greatest.
So somebody like that won't want to walk away unless they can
win more.
Okay.
Absolutely, I think so. And he's someone who's very ambitious. I know an awful lot of people, and it's been a debate that's been had over in the States for the past few weeks and few months now about whether LeBron James is the greatest NBA player of all time. A lot of people will say that he is, despite not having the rings of a Bill Russell, of a Michael Jordan. He himself, though, to just stop the argument, he needs more rings. He simply needs more titles, and I think he will move on now in search of that.
Listen very carefully to the next story. This is the kind of question that might come up in any great sports quiz, like my little segue there into your sports quiz. Of course, you guys host a sports quiz at Barasti.
Indeed.
Every Wednesday.
We do. Final weekend. It's a Wednesday. Final week this week ahead of the FIFA World Cup. Robbie and I will be down there. There still is the chance to win an all-expenses-paid trip for 4 to Wimbledon. That's flights with Virgin Atlantic, 3 nights accommodation in London, and tickets to People's Monday at the All England Club. That's the second Monday, Court 1. We will be down there again. We've been averaging about 20 teams in total over the course of the past 3 weeks. We've been given prizes as well, F&B vouchers, etc. down there. So Wednesday evening, it is the night before the FIFA World Cup. It is a celebration of all things sport. Robbie and I will be there from 8 p.m. If you are at a loose end, pop on down. It's a good night. And it's a good laugh as well.
And the question that I think might pop up at some point in a sports quiz is all about the latest winner of racing's Triple Crown.
Indeed.
Because there haven't been that many, right?
There haven't. 13th, in fact. Justify has become the 13th horse to complete the US Flat Racing's Triple Crown. That was after victory in the Belmont Stakes. That goes hand in hand with the Bob Baffert-trained horses' victories in the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness Stakes. 13 horses in history have done it. It just shows you what an incredible feat it is, I think, Justify becoming the first horse since American Pharoah, who, of course, we saw here at the Dubai World Cup, and there'll be an awful lot of clamour now to see Justify making the trip over for the Dubai World Cup, which is in, next year, as the case is now, back in next April, March, end of March, so it is. So, yeah, congratulations, and Bob Baffert, once again, the man with the Midas touch. He was the trainer for Arrowgate, the great Arrowgate that we saw have success here in Dubai, and he's now got another absolute legend of a horse, Justify, winning the Triple Crown, and he's only raced 6 races, and he's won all 6. It's incredible.
That's crazy. I mean, these horses really are the superstars of their sport,
they
aren't they? And it will be interesting to see if he pops up in Dubai, like you say, next March.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You might have heard producer there reminding us to do the falcon. Tell us about the falcon.
Have you
Chris
done the falcon? What about the falcon?
No, we are just about to talk about football. Chris McCarty's here, of course, ARN Head of Sports. And, you know, he's usually pretty bouncy anyway,
yes,
if I can say that.
But he's super bouncy. He's like Zebedee.
I am.
Zebedee after a Red Bull.
It's brilliant, that. It's a wonderful image, that. But yes, I am. The FIFA World Cup, it all kicks off on Thursday. You cannot hide from it. Four sleeps until the greatest show on earth kicks off. And we were just talking about it off air, Claire. Yes, it's 4.5 weeks of non-stop football. There are some days there are three matches. Well, most of the days.
Grin on your face.
There are three matches. And there's a few of the days there's four matches in total. So there's nothing but football on my TV screen at home for the next month and a half.
Yes. I hope anybody else that lives in the house quite likes their football too.
Oh, they don't.
Oh, dear.
They don't.
They're going away on a long holiday. So where are we in our prep? We've had some friendlies over the weekend.
Yes, we have. We've seen England. They had a victory over Costa Rica. We've seen a disappointing result, I think, for France last night. A 1-1 draw with the US of A, who will not be at the World Cup. And it was a strong team that Didier Deschamps put out as well. We also saw Spain narrowly beat Tunisia. And having watched Tunisia a bit over the past couple of weeks, now I appreciate friendlies don't mean much, but Tunisia look good, and I don't think England or Belgium will have it all their own way in that particular group at the FIFA World Cup. Of course, it's very difficult to read too much into friendlies, but the friendlies are almost done and dusted. Austria, they take on Brazil today, and then we're done and dusted, and then all eyes will turn to the opening game on Thursday evening. It is the host Russia taking on Saudi Arabia. Saudi becoming the first Arab nation ever to compete in the opening match of a FIFA World Cup. So excitement building. Then we roll into Friday. Egypt against Uruguay is one of the big matches on Friday, and then, well, the matches just take over.
And I think for us here in the UAE, you know, you'll have your own country if your home nation has made it, but I think everybody will have their eye on both Saudi Arabia and Egypt, and I expect that there will be a lot of support for those teams.
Absolutely.
And people will be out waving flags in their cars and
Absolutely.
What have you on those evenings, so they're going to be fun, aren't they?
They're going to be fun, and you know, living here now for 8 years as I have, I will be focusing an awful lot of attention on the likes of Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Iceland as well will probably catch my eye, because such a small nation doing it for the smaller nations. Scotland haven't been in a World Cup since 1998. Iceland, a population of just over 300,000, and yet they're in the FIFA World Cup, which is just a remarkable story. So a lot of nations will be catching my eye. More than that though, Claire, I want just goals, thrilling action, and at the end of it, I want Lionel Messi winning the World Cup.
Oh, that's who you'd like
to
see.
Yeah, I just think he is for me already the greatest footballer that's ever lived. Just to end the arguments, just to put an exclamation mark against his career, I would love to see Messi lifting that World Cup, because he is just so good.
So that's what you want? Is that what you think will happen?
No, I don't. I think Argentina's great rivals, Brazil, will be winning a sixth World Cup come July 15th. A lot's been said about them struggling in Europe. They did win the World Cup in Sweden back in 1958. Now, I appreciate that was a long time ago, but I'll look at the job TT, the boss, who formerly manager of Al Ain right here in the United Arab Emirates as well. The job he's done, he's got a well-balanced team, a deep squad, and I do think Brazil will take some stopping in Russia.
Well, that's Chris's prediction. But you won't have to rely on Chris's prediction only, because somebody or something else is going to be helping you.
We've jumped the bandwagon.
To guide us in our, in what's going to happen.
Well, we've had Paul the Octopus back in 2006. We had Shaheen the Camel 4 years ago. I believe we've had cockroaches, parrots, pigeons. We've had cows. We've had horses. We've had all sorts. And we've signed up Farah the Falcon, who's going to be predicting World Cup games for us. It's a bit of fun. It's tongue-in-cheek. We don't take ourselves too seriously. Robbie Greenfield has done a wonderful job in scripting some hopefully light-hearted VOs. Tom Paul Smith, our producer, has done an unbelievable job going down to Al Maha Resort and filming Farah as she's predicted the group matches. And yes, we will be releasing our first video. It is Russia against Saudi. Who will Farah be choosing? That video will be released 11 a.m. on Tuesday morning.
How, and I'm sure you've been asked this before, how does she make her choice known?
She makes it known by flying into perches. So there's two perches. The Falconer lets her go and she'll fly into the flag. And we've created flags just in front of the perches to obviously represent each nation. And she just swoops on in and picks
and chooses whichever she...
Exactly.
Well, it will be really interesting to see.
And fingers crossed, Claire, you know the lifeblood of things like this are viral content. We need this
yes.
to go viral. So there's two things. We need the help of the listeners to enjoy it, engaging it. More than that, though, we need Farah to truly be like a Mystic Meg. We need her to get more right than wrong. And if she does that, then you could see her pop up all over the place.
If she lets you down. Then
if she lets us down, you might not see
her. How successful was Paul the Octopus? Because he's the really famous one.
Very.
And he's the guy in 2006 who had us all hooked.
The guy, I love it. He was an octopus. Yeah, he did. He went worldwide, and hence all the spin-offs. We're not really being original here. That was 12 years ago, and here we are with Farah the Falcon. But he was very successful. It sounds strange saying that, but yes, the octopus was incredibly successful. I think he had a run of picking like 12 straight winners.
I wonder what became of him. Do you think he's still alive? What's the lifespan of an octopus?
He sadly passed away a couple of months.
You actually know that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I remember it. It became global news. So that's
what I love about Chris. Georgia, is that the fact I just mused on that and he knew the answer.
Naturally. No, literally no sport turned stone unturned. Every single factoid.
No sporting octopus gets past your radar.
Neglected, exactly.
Well done, Chris. Well, listen, I'll see you over the next few days anyway, but enjoy yourself because, you know, you will be in your element and you'll be keeping everyone up to date on all of the ins and outs. And you've got some great people joining you over
Robbie Fowler, former England Liverpool striker, he's going to be joining us for the first few days. We're going to be joined by a litany of guests over the course of the 4.5 weeks. And I'll say it to you, we're down at the Bridgewater Tavern, JW Marriott Marquis. All welcome. Pop on down there. We'll get you on the show. We've got a few fans. We're going to be live to Russia every night. There's prizes. There's giveaways as well. So we're bringing the World Cup to life here in Dubai. And I cannot wait.
Yeah, no, enjoy. Okay. Thanks very much. Thank you. McCarty there, head of sports here at ARN.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.